Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country, writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years, Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week, we'll be in a new town, and after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of These Parts. I'm Vince McNally, one half of your total number of hosts. That makes this my traveling companion, my friend, and yes, my brother, Elliot McNally.
How's it going, Vince?
Oh, it's going great. Hey, I've got a question for you, Elliot.
What's that?
What's the big idea?
I don't follow.
Oh, that's from the Three Stooges, right?
Maybe.
Well, this is the sort of sleuthism and research that you come to expect from These Parts. We're in a town with a little bit of Americana history, I dare say.
I think so, too. And you know, Vince, I don't necessarily think of These Parts as a funny show or even a comedy show, but I think it's going to be pretty impossible to have things not be funny this episode.
I think if there's one thing that comes through in the reviews of our show by both critics and fans, it's that it's definitely not funny at all.
Well, hopefully we prove some people wrong this episode. We're really excited, but as you know, Vince, we're also really excited for an upcoming event.
Elliot, I'm glad you brought this up. This is truly our favorite time of year because, mark your calendars, men, women, children, RandCon's coming up.
You heard it right here. RandCon is in the midst. Vince and I are eagerly awaiting this year's festivities. We're so excited to bring this to you. Vince, what great things do we have lined up for RandCon this year?
Oh man, we've got Pin the Pin on the Map. That's a fan favorite.
Well, we worked with the people at Velcro to create a life-size map that you can actually be the pin.
Yes, you get yourself into this like sort of large slingshot contraption, and they try to stick you to your hometown.
We have a lecture series coming up. If you cannot, for whatever reason, be a part of RandCon, we'll have all these lectures available for download on our website. We're also offering a scholarship program for one lucky listener to come.
Yes, the scholarship is for all of $250 to the community college of your choice. That's how we're supporting small town colleges. Also, if you're going to be flying in for RandCon, be forewarned, there are going to be protesters. We've been alerted. The Mercator Projection people are going to be picketing Mercator Pride, and they're a very impassioned group, so be sure not to cross their picket lines when you're coming in. Use the rear entrance to the convention center.
But as long as you do that, you'll have a great time. We're going to have a great time this episode because we've been having a great time the entire week, Vince.
We sure have. Talk about a town steeped in just joy, in silliness, in fun, I dare say.
It's a town I want to talk about, and it's a town that I want to put on the map.
So listeners, take a look out for the most funnily shaped of all the states, Idaho, because that's where we are this week.
And before we stick our pin in the map, we are going to need a little bit of help. Listeners, this week we're in Shemp, Idaho, and it is basically a living shrine to, you guessed it, the very first Third Stooge. Thousands of people flock here every year. Our guest is no different. He's on his pilgrimage to Shempdom. Would you introduce yourself?
Yes. My name is Theodore Healy. That's probably my 12th, maybe 13th time coming up to Shemp, Idaho. It's a little pilgrimage I like to take every couple of years. Sometimes I bring the wife, sometimes I bring the kids, but this time I just went by myself to relive all those great memories that they gave us.
Now, you get up here by pogo stick, is that correct?
I do. It's good for the legs. It's about 420 miles just to come up here all the way. It's a little dicey over the mountains, but the first time I did it, I was with my first wife, and unfortunately she did not finish that journey. But my second one has bigger calf muscles and was much better at getting over the mountains. And if you can see, my thighs My thighs are about the size of a watermelon.
They're pretty big.
I was going to say a Christmas ham, but yes, they're juicy.
Well, thank you. I get that compliment a lot, especially when I'm wearing Bermuda shorts. They see the size of my thigh muscles, and people are astounded. But if you go by pogo stick, that's really where it develops.
Well, we're so happy that you could be here with us today. Would you take a pin out of our pin barrel and stick one right in Champ, Idaho?
Okay. Let's see. Ah, here we go. Sorry.
Vince, are you okay?
Ow.
You've somehow managed to poke both yourself and me in the process. But you know what? I think... Was our camera running, Elliot? Because that looked like comedy gold.
You know, we usually have the visual setting of our camera off to record these things.
That's right. Well, thanks. A job well done. That's right there in Shemp, Idaho. So maybe kick us off by saying, what is it about Shemp that makes it so special to you? What's so important that you repeatedly, year after year, pogo your way up here?
It's the feeling of the town. It's just you smile when you come over that mountain and you see the little village of Shemp, Idaho, and how it's laid out. It's laid out. It's unusually laid out because if you actually look at a map of the town, it looks like a hand grabbing a nose. And then you see another part, like where it's another hand that's about to snap down on that hand that's grabbing the nose. It's the only town that is dedicated to slapstick to that degree.
I was going to say, coming into the town, it has this very distinctive silhouette, and it just is immediately an homage to slapstick.
Immediately an homage. You can't help but smile, to be very honest.
I've been smiling all week. You're right there. So, yes, the town, its very essence is slapstick. What kind of things go on in the day-to-day to pay homage to Shemp? And why Shemp?
You know, it takes a dedicated fan to be a Shemp fan. I mean, everyone loves the crazy hijinks and the nyuk-nyuks of Curly, and we appreciate him as well. Everyone loves the overbearingness of Mo, and everyone loves the insane blandness of Larry. But it's really Shemp, the true stooge heads, really can identify with, because he's the everyman, the stupid everyman, but an everyman. And he's permeated the popular culture in such a way that it's very subtle. It's like, have you heard the term fake Shemp?
Yes, of course.
It's not fake Curly. It's not fake Larry. It's not fake. It's fake Shemp. Because he's a stand-in for the everyman.
What an answer. What a fabulous answer. I feel like I might need to take a pilgrimage after an answer like that.
Vince, I think it's safe to say we have already been taking our pilgrimage the entire week, and I think we have just the segment to highlight it.
Couldn't agree more. This is Towning Around.
So, listeners, of course, we have the popular demand of our forthcoming Almanac Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers Comprehensive Guide to Small Town America. But to satiate you in the process of writing that, Vince and I offer you walking tours from whatever town we go to.
Yes, and these are typically kind of raw and unprocessed 14-hour long audio and video segments to be listened and watched not consecutively. The audio is split from the video, so you watch the video, and then afterwards, you listen to the audio. But for the sake of time, we take a little snippet, we blend them together, and we put them into this segment for you.
It's great that we have Theodore with us on this segment, because Vince and I, we're not from here. Theodore, you've been here multiple times, and we loved walking around the town with you, because you were able to point out some things that we just would have breezed on by.
Well, Elliot, let's not keep them hanging in suspense. Let's play them the tape.
Let's do it. Hey guys, this is Vincent Elliot McNally on our walking tour segment. We're in Shemp, Idaho with Theodore Healy. We're right pretty much in the middle smack dab of the town, Theodore. What are we looking at right now?
Right now we're looking at the giant statue. It's the glory of Shemp. This statue was actually created for one of their, it was one of their little vignettes. It was another box of mixed nuts. And then the theme to that and the plot to that whole short was that Shemp became the dictator. It wasn't one of their more popular ones, but he became the dictator of a small Eastern European country. And he started enforcing that everyone had to bow down to the statue 13 times a day. And there would be a little cuckoo that would come out of the head of the Shemp. It doesn't work anymore, unfortunately. That was mostly done by a stagehand that would just have those little gloves that would extend, and you'd see the cuckoo. But movie magic, it actually looked like it was coming out of his head. This has been graffitied over quite a bit. It used to be solid bronze, and now you can see all the spray paint on it. That's a bad word.
Some of it's still wet. There's actually a person spray painting right now.
Yes, it looks like he's with Team Mystic. Do you know what that means?
I'm certain it must be some sort of religious... people express themselves in such overt ways these days.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, I'm reading the plaque right now, is that Shemp was a huge method actor, and he actually went over to East Germany to force people to make this statue out of nuts and ship it over here piece by piece.
That's true. He was surprisingly forceful. When he would take a banana peel and force you to step over it over and over and over again, and just for his amusement, like, you would do it. Not just for your devotion to comedy, but because he had a man with a machine gun right there. And then, I mean, you'd be sore, but it was still hilarious every time.
It explains how later in life he found a job in the interrogation department of the CIA. And let's not spend all our time in this one magical place. Let's continue walking, shall we, gentlemen?
Yeah, I want to check out this over here. It looks like a replica of the, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Taj Mahal from their short Hodgepodge Mahal, where the Stooges become servants and subsequently break a bunch of priceless artifacts.
This was from 1938, the Hodgepodge Mahal. That was one of the more popular ones overseas. You could see the little replica figurines of each of them. It has Mo with a plate that he's going to smash down over Larry's head. And then you see... this is one of the few that actually had both Curly and Shemp involved. Shemp was more of it was the fourth character in this, but the marbles, it's not just a marble staircase, it's actual marbles, and you see them slipping on that. You catch one of them in midair, and one of their glorious slapstick feats, you can almost... hear the laughter, can't you?
Well, I can hear Vince almost tipping over the statue. Vince, you're not supposed to actually touch these marble delicate statues.
Elliot, you don't understand. I've never seen a cat's eye quite this exquisite.
Vince really should not.
The sign says not to touch
I've
it. I've broken it,
gentlemen.
That was a phenomenal walking tour until Vince ruined it, I think.
Yeah, that was a priceless artifact.
I would say ruined is a strong word to invoke, being that it seemed to want to be handled and played with.
Well, just like anything in slapstick, I understand where you're coming from, but we have to respect that this town is really a shrine.
You know, Elliot, when you're right, you're right. I got overcome by the spirit of Shemp.
Was there any place that you enjoyed going to, Vince, that you weren't able to lead us in our walking tour because we had to clean up thousands upon thousands of marbles?
Well, you guys were cleaning up my marble mess. I made my way over to a different statue that I thought was really important. It was called the Non-Thinker, and it depicts a nude Shemp in repose, a hand on chin, elbow on knee, bent in all his physical glory, lost in thought, wearing only his tramp's hat.
Theodore, I saw this, and it looks like the bronze around this Non-Thinker statue's eyes are almost rubbed raw, because what you're supposed to do for good luck is take your two fingers and poke the statue.
Yes, and that's what the story is. When this original statue was cast... Well, they found, and this is actually part of the secret underground history of this town. Ooh. They found someone who claimed to be Shemp's illegitimate son. And he actually insisted that he be cast inside the statue. And every time, just to make sure he was still there, you would poke him in the eyes. And if he blinked, he was still there and would grant you a wish.
Well, that sounds horrifying and elaborate.
Now, of course, bronze is very hot when it goes over a person.
So has this ever happened to you? Have you ever attempted to get a wish from the Shemp non-thinker statue?
I did. Once upon a time, my pogo stick was broken. It was my eighth pilgrimage to Shemp. Long story short, the spring was out of Conointer, and regardless, I prayed to the Shemp statue, and I poked it in the eyes, and all of a sudden, an entire wheelbarrow full of springs was coming down Main Street, and the gentleman who was wheeling it happened to not be looking, and there were these two other gentlemen with a giant plate glass window, and they didn't see each other, and they crashed into each other. It was a glorious, hilarious mess, but one of the springs rolled over to my foot, and I used it on my pogo stick.
That's amazing.
The spirit of Shemp works in mysterious and hilarious ways. I'm profoundly moved by the fact that we have some firsthand evidence of this beautiful town's beautiful tradition. Elliot, though the casting of a man in bronze to have him grant wishes to tourists still baffles me a little bit, I do feel like some of my questions have been answered.
Maybe, listeners, some of your questions haven't been answered. And Vince, I think we should get to that in the segment we call Wouldn't You Like to Know?
So, listeners, as my brother alluded to, Wouldn't You Like to Know is your weekly opportunity to write in with your specific questions, queries, and concerns about the towns that we're visiting. We have time to read three letters each and every week, this week being no different. Elliot, do you have the first one for us?
Of course I do, guys. This one comes from Reggie in Pensacola, Florida.
Thanks for writing, Reggie.
Reggie says, really happy that you're in Shemp. I hope to make a pilgrimage out there one of these days. I'm wondering, though, what about the people who love the other Stooges? Where is the safe haven for them?
An interesting question.
So, Theodore, we know that you're a huge Shemp fan, but what if you love Larry? What if you love Curly? What if you love Mo? Where's a place, where's a pilgrimage for you?
This actually speaks to some of the history of Shemp, Idaho. It used to be a series of four towns: Mo, Idaho, Larry, Idaho, Curly, Idaho, and Shemp, Idaho. But there was a controversy back in the 1960s. It was, there was going to be a rubber chicken factory. A rubber chicken factory. And all four of these towns were seeking that. I guess I want the rubber chicken factory. I want the rubber chicken factory. But it turned out that the rivalry between the towns was so intense, no one got the rubber chicken factory. So the other three towns decided, well, let's just move 50 miles east. So if you go 50 miles east of Shemp, Idaho, you'll see the Three Stooges area. We don't talk about it very much here in Shemp because it feels wrong to move away from a brother. But wow. if you go to those towns, you can talk to the Mo impersonators or the Larryites or Curly's Diner, which serves nothing but cream pies.
Those all sound like great destinations. You mean to tell me that, yes, I'm just trying to get the story straight, in response to not getting the factory, as a sort of petulant protest, the towns altogether moved in different directions away from each other?
Altogether moved in different directions away from each other. Mo moved north, Larry moved east, Curly moved south, and technically he moved the town into the middle of a... The town was moved into the middle of a lake, so you can only see it about half of the year. But it was that kind of rivalry that drove the brothers and ultimately drove them apart.
Fascinating. A tragic tale.
What do you have to say to the people who allegedly stuck around in Shemp, but still like the other Stooges, and just stuck around to kind of muck things up for everybody? So I'm talking, of course, about the secretive society of the Freemasons, who are Mo enthusiasts, and you'll see them under the cover of night, you know, ruining different Shemp memorabilia.
You see them, it's usually during the full moon. I've only been here twice when they've come out, but they come out in their robes, and it's generally, it's The leader has this kind of ornate robe with an M on the back of it, but everyone else is wearing these coveralls, these painter's coveralls that have the word Mo stitched above the left breast. Mm. And they chant their glorious chants. I mean, I'm not a Freemason, but I hear them. You hear them over the hill saying, "What are you, a wise guy? What are you, a wise guy? What are you, a wise guy?"
Over and over again. That's haunting.
Over and over and over. It's terrifying.
A lot of people call them the Illuminati, I think, right?
The Illuminati, yes. They grab a curly fan, sometimes a Larry fan, sometimes, heaven forbid, a Shemp fan, out of his bed at night, and they put him in the town square, and they make him reenact some of the scenes from their glorious short films. Over and over and over, so many hands, so much slapping, and I couldn't help but laugh. Like, you don't want to laugh, but mm-hmm. you laugh because of the glorious sound when hand meets scalp meets cheek. You can't help but be happy.
Something primal inside all of us is the reason for the popularity of slapstick in the first place, and I guess this explains the billboard in front of the town that says "Mo money, Mo problems."
The Illuminati tend to be over in Nyuckville, which is the richest section of the town. There's a little bluff over there, and you can see people rolling down the hill in some sort of ramshackle devices, as if they just burst through a retaining wall and now they're coming down the hill at top speed, and it's very funny. But when you see 8 or 9 of these ramshackle carts rolling down the hill towards the town square, you get a little frightened, yet it's hilarious. The carts are practically on roller skates.
Well, this adds to the overall lore of the Stooges. A lot of people think that the Freemasons date back to George Washington.
It's one of the Dan Brown books that was not quite as popular. It was The Brother of Moses, and Moses is M-O-E-S-E-S. And it was about these brothers, one of whom was going to lead the Mononites, who were the people, that's what they were called at the time, who had the bull haircuts, and they dressed in those painter coveralls and would repeat these nonsense chants, nyuk, 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 over, over, over. And they were supposed to have a promised land that would open up to them in Walla Walla, Washington, because they thought that was the funniest name ever, and that would be the promised land for them. But Mo was not able to make the journey. And so, by constructing the clues that were in the Smithsonian, and this is the book plot, they took Archie Bunker's chair, they took Lucille Ball's hair, they took where the meridian goes to the Washington Monument, and it goes straight down to the Smithsonian, where it's a slapping glove, which was used in the films, which was striking Curly and Shemp's face at the same time, and he constructed that, yes, these Mononites, which are descendants of antecedents of the Illuminati, were constructing an underground base in Walla Walla, Washington. Of course, that is all rumor and supposition. It's a 3 pogo stick day journey away. So,
this is fascinating. I almost want to read more into this.
Mm-hmm. Almost. In the meantime, we have another letter right in front of us to read, and this one comes from Georgia in Tallahassee, Florida.
So what does Georgia have to say, Vince?
Well, Georgia wants us to know that she's a big cinephile, that she's a big movie fan, and as such, she loves movies of all lengths, including the Stooge shorts. Well, that makes four of us, Georgia. Mm-hmm. She goes on to say her favorite Stooge short was actually not that short at all, and it was made in the 70s. And it goes by the name Deliverance. And in this, a group of travelers are hilariously harassed by people of the swamp to the tune of a glorious banjo riff.
I feel like Georgia has a slight different interpretation of this film that she's talking about.
I seem to be remembering it a little bit differently myself. Of course, as you listeners might be aware, Deliverance is not a Stooge short at all. The Stooges are not present. Indeed, all the Stooges were dead by the time that it was filmed. Instead, it was a 1970s thriller about the misadventures of one canoe trip. Do you have any insight as to what might have crossed her wires?
Well, there was this one short. It was an outdoor adventure called Egg Canoodles. So it's canoe and noodles. It was a portmanteau, and it wasn't one of their stronger puns.
This is where they're delivering noodles via canoe, right?
Yes, delivering noodles via canoe. That's their whole business. It was a threadbare plot, but it was mostly just a setup for a lot of slapstick hijinks. There's this one actually very harrowing scene where Curly sees the egg that they were using, because it was a golden goose who was laying these eggs which made magnificent noodles. Well, the goose popped out of the canoe and ran off into the woods, and Curly ran after it and ran across these hill folk who were out hunting possum, and Curly tripped, and he fell, and of course what happened was the hill folk came upon him and asked him to squeal like a piggy. And of course this was the 1940s, so literally he squealed like a piggy. It wasn't as if someone was trying to have their way with Ned Beatty. No, it was Curly literally squealing like a piggy. They actually cut that from the final picture because they thought that was too close to home. It was for many of the younger viewers, it was a little disturbing, and especially the part where he was not only squealing like a piggy, but covered in nothing but bacon grease. It was a bit of an experimental phase, I believe.
Dark comedy.
It was dark comedy, and it was the part where they were influenced by German expressionism, which wasn't, of course, very popular in America in the 1940s, but it was like a very high cheekbones and the makeup that was very stark, like an F.W. Murnau picture. It wasn't one of their more popular films, unfortunately. It's been mostly lost to history. They tended to cut anything involving a man naked covered in bacon grease. They tend to cut that out of the syndicated packages, to their detriment, in my opinion.
Well, that's a shame, because something the film is most famous for is the glorious return of Shemp, where he smashes a banjo onto each of the perpetrators' heads.
Yes, and if you listen very closely, there is a distinct tonal difference, and this is the devotion of them to their crafts. A distinct tonal difference as it hits the giant bald head of Curly, the curly mopped hair of Larry, and the bowl cut of Moe. There is a distinct difference. It's like clang, clang, clang. It's almost a bell sound, because they did not actually have a banjo in the Foley room. They just used a bell, and they figured people would understand. But it was a distinctly different bell for each head being hit.
Well, even on camera, it wasn't a banjo, because on camera, bells look more like banjos.
Mm-hmm. And so it was, what they did is they took a mop. They took a mop handle, and they screwed it into a bell. And I mean, let's face it, most of America did not know what a banjo looked like in the 1940s. Sure. They thought it looked could be a violin, could be a xylophone, could be a giant euphonium. And they didn't know, but they saw a man plucking strings that weren't there on the side of the bell, and then he raised it over his head and down one on Curly, one on Larry, one on Moe, the power of three, and it was a glorious moment. Unfortunately, few people have seen it.
Well, as they say, the devil is in the details, and this only leaves me craving for more details. Theodore, do you have our final question of the segment?
Yes. Let me see here. This one is from Cassandra from New Jersey, and she also says, hello, I'm a giant Three Stooges fan. If you were to describe the perfect uncreated Stooges short, what would it be like?
Interesting. So she is asking you to posit a non-existent Stooge short that would sit among the greats in the pantheon of their discography.
So as you think back, Theodore, what's missing? What would be your dream to see?
I think, as you mentioned before, that the devil is in the details. Mm-hmm. I think there were some distinctly metaphysical themes missing from the ovia of the Three Stooges. I would want to see one where, like Faust, like Goethe's Faust, Schemp, who is, of course, the greatest everyman stooge, is walking along the street. He's opening a newspaper, looking at the classified ads, and he sees in big, bold print, as you see it on the screen, Schemps need not apply. It seems very specific, but it establishes that the world is against him. And so he sees a mysterious stranger flipping a coin on the corner who says, "Looking for a job?" And Schemps says, looks at him, and then does a double take, and then nods his head violently. And the man in the lovely bespoke suit pulls out a contract from his inner breast pocket, and it says, "Contract, one job, no work, lots of money, sign here." And then it has like the print at the bottom, of course, where Schemp would lose his soul. And then Schemp grabs a pen out of the man's hand, signs it, and then is transported magically through the sidewalk all the way down, and you see him go through the sewer, you see him go through the mantle of the earth, you see him go past the dinosaurs. It's lots of visual gags here. And then you see him wind up in hell. And so, Mo, Larry, and Curly have to go through basically the 12 labors of Hercules to cross the River Styx and get Schemp back. And this would be an epic of unimaginable proportions. I mean, most of their shorts were like 8 to 10 minutes long. This, I would see, is beyond a miniseries. I think this could be 13 or 14 hours. You would split up 2 hours every year, and it would be bigger than Harry Potter. But every single task they would do to get Schemp back would be very parallel to something that would have happened in the 12 labors of Heracles. And can you imagine like these boys going into the Augean stables, cleaning out after all those horses? There's nothing but hijinks there.
Well, and then when they meet Circe, they could reuse the egg canoodle scene.
Yes.
When Curly is squealing like a pig. It almost writes itself. And I feel like, don't take this as offense, but I feel like it's almost so obvious. Why didn't they think of this?
Well, I think the studios, they were less apt to spend millions upon millions of dollars and for something artistic back then. I mean, it became very formulaic after a while. It's like, oh, yes, Curly has a get-rich-quick scheme, or Mo has a get-rich-quick scheme, and Curly messes it up, and Larry falls in love, or whichever. It generally switched between the three. And then Curly would get some hijinks, slap his forehead a few times, or if it was Schemp, Schemp would give that knowing everyman look to the camera, and you would feel like, yes, I am too Schemp. And then Mo would slap them, and you would see hands being slapped and then go over the shoulder on top of somebody's head, and that's all they wanted. They didn't appreciate the art.
So you're saying Schemp was really trying to break the mold.
Schemp was the artist of the four. They were all artists in their own way, but Schemp wanted to break the barriers. And he wanted to expand and do crazy things and expressionist things, but they could never let him. And so he became the everyman, and we are now left to think, what if?
What if? What could have been? I think that if the Stooges were here today, they would have loved to do your film. I would call it the Odyssey.
Yes, the Odyssey.
Well said, Elliot. And it's not every day that we call upon a guest not only to recount us with the facts, but to get their creative juices flowing and delve into their own comedic mind to deliver us such an interesting posit. Thanks for that. And thanks for all the listeners who wrote in and didn't get your question read. Better luck next week. Better luck next segment for us, because we're coming up on one of our favorites, Elliot.
It's a segment that, Vince, I kind of want to delve into your mind in the weekly Where's Vince?
So, listeners, we love to explore all of the towns and all of the towns that we visit, but sometimes there's a little segment, a little section that's a little extra interesting. And that's where my segment comes in. I stay in a neighborhood that I find particularly compelling and get to know the people, the places, the goings-on. This week, I was in a really fun, interesting, dark part of the city.
And where would that be, Vince?
I was in Panhandle Alley.
Panhandle Alley. Well, this sounds so interesting, especially because we're in Idaho.
Especially because we're in Idaho. Idaho, known as the sideways Oklahoma of the 50 states. It's got a panhandle of its own, but this refers to none other than street begging.
So were there a lot of homeless people in this area?
Actually, there were only homeless people in this area. You're not allowed to live in the neighborhood in a constructed building or dwelling. You need to kind of set up a series of cardboard boxes or blankets or sheets, and to make a makeshift tent. And what the people here are trying to evoke is sort of the trampish nature of Shemp. They're trying to get into his state of thinking when he was in the Stooge videos. They're trying to evoke his same behaviors. They're trying to call upon his same esprit and live life as Shemps.
Wow. That's so high level. And I wouldn't expect that just from coming to the town. Theodore, is this part of your pilgrimage every year?
It is. Panhandle Alley is one of the overlooked gems of Shemp, Idaho. Between where it's the reverse tailor that'll rip your clothes or the reverse a cobbler who will put the holes in your shoes, or the watery soup kitchen where they have the old style tin ladles and they'll just throw it in a cup for you. You get to really experience what it was like to be the Shemp broken everyman.
I couldn't agree more. I think my favorite destination was the hat floppifier who will steam your hat in such a way to make it kind of droopy and lazily hang from your head instead of, you know, firmly.
He was brought over from Estonia and worked with the Stooges, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was brought in from Tallinn, Estonia, and he says it's the humidity. So where we are in Shemp, Idaho is not very humid, but sure. He has these giant humidifiers running constantly, and it gives the air inside the hat shop almost a viscous feel, as if the humidity is sticking to your clothes and sticking to the hats, putting weight on it and making it extra floppy.
I also noticed that along with the floppy hats, along with the panhandles, Vince, everyone is dressed like Shemp.
Absolutely, that's part of the idea. It's not enough to act like him. You should look like him. I think the motto goes, you look alike a DeShemp, you act alike a DeShemp.
I have heard that motto.
It's in the plaque next to the arch where you enter Panhandle Alley.
Says, that's where I saw
it. You look like a DeShemp, you acted like a DeShemp.
Which is interesting because there seemed to be no Italian people around here that would have coined that slogan.
No.
I'm not a historian about the town specifically, Elliot. I don't know the reason for the motto, but I know how it's applied. And I actually attempted to live life as a Shemp while I was here. I thought, you know, not to just observe and reflect like the journalists that we often are, but to get involved. It wasn't without its trials and travails, Elliot.
So, Vince, tell me what you did. I've heard that some Shemps will put just enough water in their panhandle so that you can see yourself reflective in a contemplative state. And then it makes you question who you are as a Shemp and who you are as a person. So what was your tactic?
Well, Elliot, it's not wrong what you said, but you missed an important detail.
Okay.
The water in your cup for panhandling it's not placed there. Those are your own tears pooling in the cup. You're supposed to cry. And you're supposed to get in touch with your inner child and sort of cry those crocodile tears like in an old opera where you look like you're crying and then eventually the real tears do come.
Theodore, in walking in Panhandle Alley, are there any Shemps of note that you have been driven to Did you even see Vince when he was disguised as Shemp this week?
Well, you're not really supposed to look around at the Shemps, because the Shemprimage, as many people call it, when they go to Panhandle Alley and they live like a Shemp for weeks at a time, it's very contemplative, where you're supposed to have great inner Shemp truths appear to you, where through the tears. I mean, it's an experience not unlike ayahuasca, where you look inside the mirror of your tears, inside your cup, and you see great visions. Visions of holes in your shoes, visions of your shirts becoming magically unmended, visions of floppy hats. And then you think, where am I in this entire Shempiverse? Where am I? And those who are making that pilgrimage, you're not really even supposed to look at them if you're not taking the pilgrimage, because it's such an internal process. Mm. Although I was looking for a good bagel place, and I did. It was right around Panhandle Alley, and I did see someone who looked like a bit like a new Shemp. Were you the one wearing the flip flops and the yellow Oakley shirt?
You know, I, as much as I like to play at being a local, there were some things that I didn't, you know, take into account. I was scolded, chided by the Mahatma Shemp, the mm-hmm. kind of the head Shemp that walks around and bestows visions of Shempdom to people, and he slapped the iPhone out of my hands. And he said, "No, you can't listen to Stone Temple Pilots while you're pilgrimaging.
You look like a Shemp, you act like a Shemp."
He said that to me, and then he pinched my nose and he said, "You act like a Shemp now."
Although the iPhone was a little anachronistic, I do want to point out the Three Stooges short Beach Bums, when Shemp and Larry and Moe all tried to be lifeguards, and he was wearing pretty much what you had on, flip-flops and a yellow shirt, although it was black and white, so you couldn't tell.
That's what I tried to tell him that, but then as soon as I opened my mouth, he stuck a Frankfurter in it, and I could no longer speak.
That's actually the only way you can get fed when you're on your Shemprimage, is if the Mahatma Shemp sticks some sort of tube meat inside your face.
I learned a heck of a lot. My time in Shemp Alley. Thank you to the locals and to the pilgrims who were kind enough to allow me to try to experience just a sliver of the Shemp enlightenment that they have experienced. Elliot, for all that I learned, I still was left with a couple questions.
And I think we should learn a little bit more, Vince, in our next segment.
It's called Did You Know?
So, listeners, each week, Vince and I have the opportunity to fire five fast facts at you, the listener, from whatever town we are in. And Vince, I think you have the first one.
Elliot, you know I do. Did you guys know that there's a pretty avid stargazing community here in Shemp?
I had no idea, Vince.
Indeed, the Society of Stargazers of Shemp, the SSS, they're not really about seeing celestial bodies, though.
So, if they're not gazing on stars, what are they gazing upon?
They're gazing upon each other after they pull their head away from the telescope. They'll be left with a black rim of shoe polish, kind of making them look like they have a black eye. And the stargazing community is all about achieving that perfect black circle. And so it's kind of a multi-step process where they apply the shoe polish, and then one of them will act surprised after, you know, looking at the sun or the moon, and they'll come up and then they'll all kind of appraise, you know, the evenness of the polish. Have you ever attended one of these events?
I have, actually. It's always held at the second Saturday of every month, and you go up to the observatory, and they have it's a family event, and you try to see, they have a competition to see who would get the most perfect circle around the eye. I finished third to two raccoons the time I went. I don't know how they got entered into the competition, but I have to admit, their circles were perfect.
And if you don't mind just me leaning close into you, I thought you were wearing glasses, but it looks like just shoe polish rings around your eyes.
Mm-hmm. Just shoe polish rings around the eyes. It gives one a sort of an educated look from far away, but a Shemp-like look from up close.
Wow. And while I'm up close, I'm going to stick this Frankfurter right in your mouth. Vince, I didn't know that. But guys, did you know Shemp, Idaho, while it does not manufacture rubber chickens, it is the foremost manufacturer of tiny harps and angel's wings.
Elliot, I didn't know that. I guess I have seen a couple of befastened wings to the backs of pilgrims while we were here, but I didn't know that they were a manufacturing center.
Yeah, so you went to Panhandle Alley. There's also a Heavenly Lane, and that is where people dress up like the end of so many Three Stooges shorts, where they're up at the pearly gates. And it's actually that same Estonian hat flopper who manufactures harps the old way, as he says, and angel's wings the old way. He has an almost endless supply of Estonian doves with which he uses to craft these tiny wings.
Indeed, the dove population here has seemed to spiral out of control. Do you have any insight as to why that might be, Mr. Healy?
When you get a couple dozen doves, and they do what doves do, being lovey-dovey, they will have so many doves. But luckily, he does, of course, lovingly murder the doves for their wings, and takes the doves and puts them in the local butcher shop, where they rebrand them as tiny chickens. So if you get the very, very tiny birdie chickens for a little roasting, you drop them in the kids' lunch. It's kind of the balance of nature.
I see. That makes a lot of sense. Theodore, do you have a did you know fact for us?
Yes, indeed I do. It's actually regarding the creation of Heavenly Lane. Did you know Heavenly Lane was brought forth in one of the Stooges' great shorts? It was called 5-6 Heaven, and it was all about they were in a jazz band, and the jazz band was they were careening in this car down a gravelly road and ran out of control and dipped into a river, and this is right at the first part of the film. They were immediately transported to heaven, but heaven looked remarkably like a 1940s post-war suburb, and it was a commentary that because they all had their wings on, they all had their little suits, and they went off to work in the Angel Factory every day. It was a commentary on the post-war boom that people stopped understanding the satire of it and just said, "Oh, that looks really neat. Let's do that." And so people have the wings and they have the little halos, which used to be made with lead. But now it's an aluminum blend covered typically in gum wrappers. And they just walk around every day completely missing the comedy of it. But, I mean, they seem happy.
So I've heard about this short before, and the Freemasons I know say that if you hold up the back of a dollar bill to the screen while you're watching it, you can hear Shemp's chanting in the distance.
When it's very still and there's no noise around, you can hear the faintest of chanting. 5-6-7, take me to heaven. 5-6-7, take me to heaven. And it's uncanny. If you take a 45 of the song Pop Goes the Weasel and you loop it, and you as soon as the credits roll on the opening credits roll, you put the needle on and you just say, run it over and over and over. At the very end of 5-6 Heaven, you have the pop when they finally come back to Earth.
And that is the same pop when Mo sticks his guitar pick from the jazz band into Shemp's eye, and people think that the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill is just a guitar pick and Shemp's eye.
Wow, I didn't know any of that, and it honestly seems a little unbelievable, but I've learned never to question anything Stooge related, because it's truly stranger than fiction. I didn't know that. Did you guys know Shemp is a bit of an epicenter for renter's insurance?
So why is that, Vince?
Well, all the moving companies here in Shemp, Idaho, are a little bit maybe method in their methods. They, when they're moving your belongings, they'll frequently, you know, throw them or kick them about, stumble down the stairs with them, you know, unfasten things to the top of the moving van, and when they move, then they come spilling off the top in a comedic way. So almost none of your possessions are destined to make it from destination A to destination B without being destroyed or mangled.
Well, I've heard that, God forbid, you require them to use a ladder, because if they swing around, someone's going to get hit in the face.
And Vaz ownership is purely a liability in this town.
Theodore, have you ever considered just moving to Shemp, Idaho, or is this an almost detriment to you doing so?
I have considered it, but I do have a couple grand pianos that I own. And if I were to get, for example, a two-second-story walk-up, my concern would be is that they would attach the piano to the pulley, and all of a sudden I would be, for some reason, standing beneath the piano, and then the man holding the piano on the pulley would get a bee of some sort and have to shoo the bee off, and of course the piano would crash down upon my head.
I imagine in this scenario you would sort of, your head would poke up from inside the piano, and then you'd have keys for teeth.
Yes, that is exactly the scenario I'm envisioning.
I see. Well, that would deter me as well. Elliot, do you have the last Did You Know fact for us?
Of course I do, guys. Did you know that it is illegal to have a mustache in Shemp, Idaho?
Is it? I had no idea. Why would that be?
I'm sure, Theodore, you know about the long-lasting feud between the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges.
Yes, shoe polish mustaches used to be punishable by no less than a $500 fine and 30 days in jail. They've gone a little bit lenient on that. It's now just a $100 fine and a week in jail. But the only time you ever should use polish is on your shoes. It should never be a mustache.
Or on your eyes.
Or on your eyes, if it's a black eye. If someone is found with a mustache, there's a public shaving. They take you to the Shemp statue in the middle of town, and they will mock you and take a giant straight razor and put one of those barber robes around you, and then they will get a little out of control. They'll put the lather not just on your face, but they'll put it on your hair too. And so the barber who's listening to the Barber of Seville will be cutting off your mustache, and then all of a sudden he takes the razor and it goes all the way down the very center of your head. So now that you have this giant strip in the center of your head, you look in the mirror and you're shocked, like, oh no, my hair.
That was, of course, in the short Weenie Todd. What is interesting though is that Shemp, because of his, you know, Slavic roots, had a pretty thick beard and mustache, and he couldn't shave his mustache fast enough. In order to distinguish himself from the Marx Brothers, he had his mustache, but then would cover it with flesh-colored makeup.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's fascinating. And it goes to show, just like this fine American town, that not everything is immediately what meets the eye. There's a little something extra. There's a little something to uncover. And thank you, Theodore Healy, for your help in uncovering the mysteries and magic of Shemp, Idaho. We know you're a busy man, so we appreciate you taking the time. It's been a journey, to say the least.
And listeners, we have a little something extra for you. It's a segment we call Wish You Were Here.
So in a perfect world, you'd take all these pilgrimages with us, listeners. But this is not a perfect world, and instead, you have to settle for the next best thing, which is an audio postcard from us to you in the towns we're staying. It goes a little something like this. Dear listener, wish you were here in Shemp, Idaho.
A living shrine to the very first, the original Third Stooge.
A town where, if you're not careful, you might get a knuckle sandwich or a ring around the eyes. But if you are careful, you might walk away with a much floppier hat.
A town filled with fake Shemps, but very real people, including the amazing Theodore Healy.
A town that it doesn't matter if you come by rickshaw, runaway bicycle, or pogo stick, when you arrive, you're going to see something magical.
Farewell from these parts to yours.
Listeners, thanks for listening to the episode this week in Shemp, Idaho. We had some laughs. Hope you did too. Come back next week when we're in Lanford, Vermont.
Lanford is the home of the 1997 middle school science education film, Mulch, Where Does It Come From? And its important 2007 follow-up documentary, Where Are They Now? You won't want to miss that.